That was a beautiful, beautiful song. And you're going to hear those words again as I read them from Matthew 5, 1 through 12, page 4 of the New Testament, and also on the screen. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him. Then he began to speak and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." May these words find a place in your heart and comfort you. Amen.
So you know those words. We know them as the Beatitudes, which comes from a Latin word that simply means the blessings. They are the start of a section in Matthew's gospel that cover three chapters that are better known to us as the Sermon on the Mount, a text that you perhaps know all too well. For the next three Sundays, we'll be looking at sections of material from Jesus' first sermon, and I think it's really his only sermon that truly appears in the gospel narratives. So let me give you a little context. This comes early in the story of Jesus' life. He's just gone around and recruited people to come and be with him by simply offering three words of invitation. Come, follow me. And miraculously, people did, which most of us wouldn't. If somebody walked in here right now and said, "Come, follow me," you'd sit right where you are and they would leave without you walking behind them going anywhere. So the question then has to come, well, what are you inviting me to do? What kind of life is this invitation going to bring? You have to continue on into the story to find out, and that finding out is in the Sermon on the Mount. You've been given an invitation from Jesus to come with him and follow in his way of life. Now we have to figure out what that way of life is. Now, it is not the comfortable Christianity that you and I practice. So let's just get that out on the table. It's nothing like what you and I do in our week-to-week living as disciples of Christ. It is much more than that. And you just have to call it for what it is. What Jesus is going to teach you in this sermon is counter to anything going on in his world. It is revolutionary. These words are challenging and demanding, and if you just take them as nice, sweet words, you have missed the entire point of his Sermon on the Mount. They are powerful words that are life-changing. So what Jesus is inviting you to do is follow in a life that is truly life-changing. And if you want to be a part of his team, you're going to have to change your life. And if you don't, just say no to the invitation and keep on going. Because if you say yes, you will have to live a new and different life. So what is this life we're being called to live? He starts the sermon, and by the way, we call it the Sermon on the Mount as though it's some great high point. If you go to Israel and see this spot, it's more like this than that, which actually makes sense because the crowd is down here and he's sitting up here with his disciples. He's actually just at a rise, if you will, a small hill, because he didn't have a good sound system like we're enjoying today where you can hear everything. He had to project his natural voice. And if you're going to do that to the crowd who had gathered, you just need to slightly be above them so your voice can carry out and everyone can hear. It's not like these words are coming down from some great mountain to the masses below. He's sitting in their midst, basically, telling this story, and it starts with blessings. I'm going to tell you what I think the nine blessings are all about. And what I think of them is, first is this. You don't get one of them as your spiritual gift. Oh, I'm the meek person, or I'm the one who's going to mourn, or I'm the one who's been persecuted, or I'm the peacemaker. They're not like that. I think they come as a complete set. It's like getting a whole set of china at home, you know. If you just have one plate and there are four people eating, you're going to have a problem. I think it's trying to say you need to cultivate this list in your life. Now, we see them and we have trouble identifying with them because it's not how most of us are living life. And so they become challenging for us. So I'm going to tell you what I think each of these nine might be about. The first one for me is the hardest. Blessed are the poor in spirit. It's taken me a long time to try to figure out what this one might mean. But for me, the key word of understanding is the word poor. What I've noticed about people who feel that they're poor is that they are people capable of expressing tremendous gratitude. Tremendous gratitude for what they have received, because they know they don't have much in the first place, and anything they're given is a gift. I learned this lesson early on about when I was Gus's age. I've shared with this with his mom. When I've seen him so interested and engaged in what we do to help others, I've told Elizabeth, be careful, that's how I got my start. When I was in elementary school, I was part of a ministry with an elderly couple in my church who every Saturday came by my house, picked me up. We went to the grocery store. We got food. They had collected clothing. They'd gone to pharmacy and filled people's prescriptions for the poor in my county who literally I didn't know people could live in such dire conditions. It was a rude awakening for an elementary age kid to see such poverty. And they were just two people being a social service team helping people falling through the cracks. They couldn't carry all this stuff in, so they used me, if you will, as the muscle to get the stuff out of their car and into the home. And to hear those expressions of gratitude, and I hear it every time I see something like that, every time I've worked our food pantry, to see the genuineness of the gratitude that is expressed by the people we're helping with just a bag of groceries that they can go home and make a hot meal is incredible. And it is out of that gratitude that you build your spirit, that the Holy Spirit can work in you because you realize the gifts that you've been given, you are grateful for them and you want to share them. And the way you share them is to say thank you by using them. I think that's what it means to be poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. I spend a lot of time with people who mourn. Yesterday, I was in two occasions with people who are mourning. I was out at Sierra Madre at the Pioneer Cemetery doing a funeral for a 40-year-old man, helping his family deal with the pain of his death. And then I came here to help Jim and you celebrate Jack's life. When you are mourning, and all of you are mourners at some point, time or another in life, this will come to you. You will know the gift of mourning. You will know what it is to be at that deepest level of human pain, which is to lose someone you love. And that cannot help but soften the hardest of human hearts, because it builds the gift of empathy. Because you know what it's like to have someone come sit in that pain of mourning. They may not even have the magic words to say, because nobody does, but the fact that they sit with you in that pain is a gift. And it is only when you're broken by mourning that you can have a heart for others. So blessed are us when we mourn. Blessed are the meek. We tend to think that as just the poor little wimps of the world out there, up against those who are powerful and mighty. And I don't think that's what this blessing is all about. I think it's a call to gentleness. And our world needs a huge dose of gentleness right now. And it needs some gentle people. And I think one of the greatest things someone can say about you is that you are a gentle woman or a gentle man. There is more power in being gentle than in any other form of power there is. So blessed are those who are gentle and meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Every day you have an opportunity to do that. Every day, somewhere along your path out there in the world, you're going to have an occasion to meet someone who needs something more than you. You don't have to think this through. You don't have to go looking for it. They're going to come right by your path. You're going to stumble upon the need. If you've been claimed by Christ, then you will stop and help. You will be that good Samaritan on the road. That's what this blessing is all about. When Jesus can later tell that story, this is what he has in mind. And you all know that story. You know who didn't stop, and you know who did. And that makes all the difference in the world. So when you see a need, stop and respond, and you will bless somebody through your hunger and thirsting for righteousness. Blessed are the merciful. I think mercy is one of the most amazing and underused products out there. Mercy is amazing. Mercy is connected to forgiveness. It's letting go of things that have hurt you, or people who've said something wrong, or someone who stabbed you in the back or done you wrong. It's a letting go of that. Because if you don't, it's like a toxic disease inside of you. It's just going to eat you alive. To practice mercy is to let go of how others have hurt you. Because in doing that, you have no longer given them the power to have control over you with how they harmed you. So let it go and find mercy. It will be the most freeing thing you can do. Blessed are the pure in heart. To me, that means I'm going to stop at all times and ask that question: how would God want me to respond right now? It's the stopping and thinking before I let this thing get me into trouble. Many of you have used your tongue and found that it's gotten you into trouble, saying something that you realized, oh, I maybe should have thought that through first before I said those words. We do it all the time. That's one of our greatest challenges and sins, I think. We can do a lot of harm with our words. So I would say, think pure thoughts. Because if you can think the pure thought, guess what? You're probably going to speak more pure words. There's a direct correlation. Because usually what comes out of our mouth is really what's up here or here that we want to say. And it's the truth with some quotations around truth that we're trying to speak, but it may not be what is needed to be said. Maybe sometimes you just need to sit on your truth and not share it. Because maybe your truth isn't going to bless that other person. So keep that in mind about being pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers. We tend to lift up some of the big ones like Gandhi and Nelson Mandela and folks like that, thinking they're the ones called to do this. No, every one of us is called to be a peacemaker. I think back in the 60s, and I wasn't quite old enough to really participate, but I know the images of that, and I know when, for instance, you know, National Guard troops would come to college campuses and have their, you know, guns raised at the students, and those images of students taking the daisies and putting them in the barrel of the gun. If you want to know what an act of peacemaking is, that's about as good an act as I can give you for a visual. Sticking a flower in a barrel of a gun. That's peacemaking. Peacemaking can happen anytime you see somebody being wrong and you stepped in and you intervene. If you see somebody being harmed by words or actions and you don't intervene, you're not being a peacemaker. Peacemakers go into where it's dirty and gritty and say, no, that's not how we resolve this. There is a different way. There's Jesus' way. So let's talk this through and find the peaceful solution. We need to do it as individuals. We need to do it as societies. We need to do it as countries of the world. We need a lot more peacemakers in our lives. Blessed are those who are persecuted. You probably haven't felt too persecuted in your faith because, as I said, we're those comfortable Christians of the world. But at the time Jesus is sitting up on this hill, he knew the persecution that everyone sitting at his feet were about to experience just by following him. Every one of them, if they were going to be true to his message, were going to find out what persecution is all about. The early church, our spiritual ancestors, they all knew persecution. They paid a price to come sit in here on Sunday morning and do what you just gently walked in and didn't have to think about it. But where might you be persecuted in your faith? When you stand up and point out some wrong, when you speak truth to power, you might be persecuted. When you point out that somebody's doing something to harm someone else, you'll probably find some element of persecution in that. Persecution takes strong spiritual people. Because if you crumble in that, you're not going to make it. But if you really want to represent Jesus, try a little persecution. That's where your faith will be tested, to go back to the first question we had this morning. And the last one is stand up to evil. Is there enough of that going on in the world right now? Doesn't seem to be. I'm not even sure we're doing a good job calling out evil and labeling it for what it is. And that's what we need to do. There is great evil going on in the world around us. Great evil killed Jesus. Political and religious evil took him to the cross. There is still great political and religious evil going on in the world. Anyone who has power, who abuses that power, is evil. And we need to name it and claim it and call it out and say that. Because if we don't, no one else will. That's what Jesus had in mind when he sat there on that hillside looking at all these people at his feet, that if you don't do this with me, then none of this is going to make a difference. All of these things talking about the kingdom of heaven is like, remember, that is not that place up there where you think you're going someday. He's talking about a new world here that he's trying to create. And he's inviting us to be partners in it. Are you ready to be radical? Are you ready to be challenging? Are you ready to have your faith make a difference? Then receive these blessings and live them, and you will be a disciple of Christ. And if you don't, you'll just be a comfortable person sitting right here on a hard pew week after week without a whole lot going on in your life. For the last 4 weeks, and you're going to hear it for the next 5 months, you're receiving a blessing. The last line is the theme of today. Take what you know, what you've heard, what you've learned, what sits on your heart, and go and be a blessing for the world. Come follow me and go be a blessing for the world. The Sermon on the Mount will teach you how to do that. Amen.